Here we go. Lordy. Hi, I'm Miss Parker from RV Project Help.
The material and information.
And I've got a disclaimer that just can't wait to go. This afternoon, I wanted to do kind of a different kind of a recording. This one is about wealth and status. And a lot of people think that they want wealth, but what they actually want is status. So that's kind of what this discussion is going to be about. It's going to give you some ideas about wealth and status and the difference in them. And if you know the difference, it sure makes it a lot easier to get status after you become wealthy. They just kind of go hand in hand. Kanaka has made me an incredible, incredible disclaimer. He's got a voice that sounds
The
like
material
Darth.
and
He's
information.
got a voice that sounds like Darth Vader. And it's pretty fun, pretty fun. So here we go.
Information contained or given on this website or audio files are for general information and entertainment purposes only. All parties on this channel are not lawyers or financial advisors. You should not rely on this material to make any business decisions. While this channel does endeavor to keep the info up to date and correct, RV Project Help makes no representations, warranties of any kind, express or implied about the completeness, accuracy, reliability, suitability, or availability with respect to the website, information product services, audio files, or related graphics contained on this website for any purposes. All due diligence is the sole responsibility of the participant.
Isn't that great? It's the most amazing voice ever. Thanks, Kanaka, wherever you are. So again, my name is Miss Parker, and I do these recordings to try to get people ready emotionally and mentally for the kind of wealth that we're all expecting to get. And I've had a lot of experience being very wealthy. I've had it, lost it, had it, lost it, had it again, and lost it again. Thanks to the industry that I'm in. I was in the cannabis industry, and the feds just really don't like me. And so it's been kind of a cool blessing to be able to go up many millions and then lose it all, then go up many millions and lose it all. It goes back and forth, you know? So you do the best you can and see how, you know, just see how it goes. So, a lot of people, they think they want wealth, and what they actually really want is status. And the two are kind of the same. They go, you get one with the other. But a lot of times when you're first wealthy, you don't get that there's a lot of differences between the two. So I'm just going to go over some things that I think you should be aware of. Nomads. One of the things that you're going to see with wealthy people is how carefree they are. And it's not just being carefree, it's being stress-free. And this isn't like, the backpacker that lives on, the kindness of the world. This is like, been there, done that, got the cake, I'm ready to, I just want to relax. When you get to that kind of relaxation, it's because you beat the game of life. You know, everybody else is still playing this game. And, all of us, we want to beat the game of life. We all inspire to do that, aspire to do that. And I think a lot of the people that are in the RV, that's one of their goals, not just to be a humanitarian, but to win at the game of life. And they always tell you, you want to take care of yourself if you take care of others. No, Mags, stop. Mags is saying, you're talking to me. I know it. Just let me out so I can love on you. No, little puppy. So One of the things that you will see with very wealthy people is that they enjoy the moment. They're not running, running, running. They're not really, you know, once they've decided that that's it, that they're done and they're at their pinnacle and now they're just going to coast, they're going to relax with their life. You can tell who they are immediately. They're not focused. They're not stressed at all. They're not depressed and they're not always in a hurry. They're super chill. They're super relaxed. If they get there and do it, they live on 3/4 time and everything works out well. Most of my friends, they come from a high pressure business background or a high pressure cannabis industry background. Some of them sold their companies for FU money and they just decided not to start another one. You know, they got to the top. They don't want to risk it again because in the cannabis industry, if you get up and you are worth millions, every time you restart or you start another project or you start another grow, you're risking everything. And so a lot of my friends, they just book the win. They go, that's it. And I'm out. I'm done. I've got everything I wanted. They live their best life at that point. And that's a sign of status. That is absolutely a sign of status. I've got one of my friends who's been, you know, he had a whoops baby, started later in life with kids. And I mean, he is in his early 60s and he's got a 12-year-old. And they go skiing. They water ski, they snow ski, and he just hangs out with his kid. And he's been doing that for the past 10 years. I got another friend who I talked to a couple years ago that I wanted to go sail, and he thought that was just a great idea. And he's now sailing around the world with his daughter. And you know, mom didn't want to go, so him and his daughter and his youngest son, the youngest son's, you know, a lot of work, but they just have a blast. And you are able to live a carefree life when you have that kind of status, when you have the kind of money where you've got your FU money and you've done everything that you want to do. You've lifted the companies, you know, everything you've done, you've done. Everything that you want to do, it's in the bag, it's in the books. And now you're just really, truly enjoying your life. And that is a type of status. Another thing that is, see, the thing is the people that are already wealthy, they hate us. They really hate the nouveau riche. They don't like us at all. They wish we would just drop off the planet. They think it's funny if we completely screw up. And they won't help us. You know, you're going to crash and burn, and the nouveau riche are sitting over there having tea going, yeah, you know, Martha is going to learn a terrible lesson, and they don't stop it. Because we're entertainment for them until we can get our feet on the ground and figure out how to be wealthy. So one of the things that is instant status is how much of the world you've seen. The thing is, travel is a really big industry, but travel doesn't teach you the world. Travel teaches you who you are. I'm on my second passport and I get bored with some people because I've seen more, I've heard more than most of the people I sit with at a table. I have more experience with the international world than most people I know. And that does grant me a type of status and I'm aware of it. So I don't pull that card out. I don't really talk, like I'll talk with my friends about different things I've done and gone, but I don't pull that card out because the biggest thing that the rich do not tell you is you elevate yourself, you raise yourself to a different type of status when you travel a lot, especially if most of your friends that you have now don't have the privilege, or in a lot of cases, the courage to go travel. A lot of people are like, when I had money, I would offer, hey, do you want to go, like, let's go to Europe and go have tea cakes. And tea cakes, what's that? Oh, those little tiny finger cakes you can get in London and stuff. They're really nice. And you can't get them to leave America. They won't even get a passport. I lived in Tasmania, Australia for a year. I lived in Melbourne, Australia for 6 months. And you start talking about the different things that you can do there that you can't do in America. And if you hear somebody talking about traveling, and if it starts a kind of a feeling in your chest, then you have that feeling as well. You have that desire as well. And you will recognize kindred souls when you travel. And it's awesome. There's just not enough good things to say about it. It shows you who you are. It teaches you more about yourself than anything you're going to learn from traveling. No, Maggie. Stop it. One of the biggest prices you're going to pay in life is the things you don't know. You're going to pay massive prices for the things you don't know. And a lot of people make a lot of assumptions about the world because they just flat don't know it. And you're going to be doing humanitarian projects. You need to go see things. You need to go see the world so you understand how the world it actually is. And, pretty much the hate and the ignorance and the judgment that you get from people, that is from a fear of the unknown. Well, people don't know, so they, well, I don't like you because, oh, whatever. They just don't know. So, travel removes the fear of the unknown. And it's a fantastic thing. And it, like I said, it does grant you a type of status. And, I went back to my high school reunion, and I was the only person in my whole high school class that had traveled. I had, my grade school class from where I went from kindergarten to eighth grade, and then I changed cities and I went to another school from eighth grade to high school. Most of my high school friends passed away in a terrible, terrible bus accident. But my grade school friends, these are the people that are in the children from the tiny little farm town I grew up in. I mean, my grade school reunion, we had to take 4 years of kids just to get 30 people. And I was the only one who had left. Nobody else had left. And I mean, people treated me as if I was some kind of exotic flower. It's like, I'm no different than all of you. We all grew up here. I'm the same person. I just left. I just traveled. And so traveling is going to create a status for you as well. One of the things that you're going to have to make some decisions on, and you're going to have to make some decisions really quick. You're going to have to decide if you're going to live a stealth wealth life or if you're going to be out there. And if you're out there, that causes its own problems. We live in America in an attention economy. So wherever attention goes, money flows. That's just the way it works. This is why we get online and we see like the stupidest people get crazy amounts of money because they're good at toying with people's attention. I mean, the Kardashians, who I just despise, they're masters of this. And because they mess around with your emotions and mess around with everybody else's feelings and different things, society has granted them status because of it. They don't have anything more than any one of us do. They just are masters at messing with people. And ultimately, it's branding and it's attention. And that's why these bitches are so attention seeking, is because, I mean, look at all the different things the Kardashians sell. They couldn't do that if they didn't get attention. They couldn't do that if they were masters at garnering followers, getting people to be interested in what they're doing. And it comes down to basically, if you can sell something, you will acquire wealth. It's just that simple. Wealth from sales, wealth from moving a lot of merchandise grant status, because unfortunately, Americans envy wealth in others. And so people will grant you status because you're wealthy. And you know, it's not just the Kardashians. I mean, there's something even bigger that's right in your face. It's Google. Look at what Google sells. Look at what Amazon sells. It's because they have attention, because they create attention, and they with attention becomes incredibly big business. So these two, Google, Amazon, and others, they allow people to buy attention with money. And you know, unless you sit down and think about it, you know, this kind of passes you right by, but that is actually the truth of what they've done. It's manipulation and attention. So for women, this happens a lot. You'll be at a party or you'll be at an event and you'll be talking to different people, and you talk to some guy and guy walks away and your girlfriend walks up to you and goes, "Did you know that guy's really rich? Or a billionaire or multimillionaire?" Like, you can nearly watch people's faces change as soon as you say that. Because when you say that, it causes that person to give status to their wealth. And, you know, we've been waiting for the RV to happen for 3 years. So, I mean, we want the wealth to be able to do our humanitarian projects and other things. And it's so freaking hard to acquire that kind of wealth. We as Americans, we generally grant status to those that have wealth. And the thing is that it not just Americans. It's like you can go to Europe and like you can meet you know, a minor royal, and rich people will grant status to those richer than them. Rich people will grant status to those that have royalty. But unfortunately, when you first get wealthy, one of the things that newly wealthy people don't understand is that being rich and looking rich are two completely different things. And one is way better than the other. Because, see, the thing is you can look wealthy, you can look rich, But the moment people realize that you're not, you instantly lose the status that was granted to you. Now, I'm talking about real juice. Like you people think you're wealthy, and you go to a hotel and they'll give you the best rooms in the hotel, and you didn't ask for it. They look at you and they oh yeah, this guy's wealthy, and they grant you the status of being wealthy. So it's you know, how you behave, how you look, you know, that will grant you status, you know. You know, Sam Bankman-Fried, his parents were really wealthy, and he looked like a ditz, you know, and yet, you know, it's all PR fabricated bullshit, and yet people granted him status, and, you know, he was talking to the president of the United States, and, you know, all kinds of stuff. People are going to Google you as this goes on, and what comes up in Google is can either increase or decrease your status. And, you know, a lot of people don't know that they can buy press mentions. And when I was first starting my first vertical company, CBD company, I bought press mentions. You can take like less than $5,000, and I can fill the entire first page of Google results about articles about how freaking amazing I am, what I've done, my inventions, all that kind of crap. Less than $5,000. Most people don't know that you can buy status. Most people that you don't know that you can buy yourself press mentions, and it's just bullshit. It's all a buildup that you can do, but you don't walk the walk and talk the talk, you're going to crash as soon as people figure out that's not who you really are. You know, when I first started, you know, 45 years ago, God bless America, I'm old. I could have gone all day without realizing it was 45 years ago. That sucked. Back then, let's just do back then. Making media announcements, any kind of media was expensive. You know, I published books about growing cannabis. I put stuff, articles in newspapers. I put articles in television. I called favors up to get my name in different places. I wanted... I wanted people to know that I was a strain chaser. I wanted people to know that I built strains for wealthy people. I wanted people to know that you could call me and I could, you know, I would make you a type of cannabis strain that people would know your name. I was virtue signaling. I was signaling to everybody, hey, I'm worth the money. Yeah, I'm going to charge you 50 grand to create a strain, but yeah, people will know your name because my strain is that good. And you know, that's just one example of cultivating status from, you know, television or print media. And it's the same today. It's the reason why people grant status to people they see on TV. It's why we look up to the people on the cover of magazines, you know, and then that's been going on for a while. Now, those of us that are awake and know better, the past 3 years, you know, we did that. We granted status to people we saw on the cover of magazines until we realized this is all BS and it's, you know, engineered by PR firms. So press mentions was one easy way to get like instant status. I was always a fan of stealth wealth. Once I made big money, lost it. Second time I made big money, I was all about stealth wealth. I had artwork in my walls that what you know I had $100,000 pieces of art in my house. I had sculpture, you know, $50,000-$60,000 pieces of sculpture. I had a piece of underwater sculpture that was in my pool that was worth more than my damn swimming pool. The sculpture in the pool was worth more than what I paid to have the pool built. The thing about art is you have to cultivate good taste to have good art. And this is something that you don't just boom, there it is, get it. It takes time to cultivate it. You need an art curator that can get to help you get an eye for art. And my guy that did all my art for me, I mean, he got it. He absolutely get it. I never did. I just knew that he could go out and spend $500,000 and get a couple pieces of art and put them in the house. And I mean, you could feel it. You could feel the energy from good art. You can feel it. It makes you feel really good. You enter your home and it feels different. It feels on point, like on fleek. It feels good. And I mean, I had a Basquiat on one of my living room walls, and a lot of people didn't know who Basquiat was, but they knew that it was good and they knew it was really wildly different. How many people in here know what a Basquiat, who Basquiat is? Just open up your mic and say, I know, or say, I don't know.
I
Anybody?
don't know. I don't know.
I've heard of.
Let me get you guys some images because you are gonna go, the fuck are you doing, Parker? This is just completely wrong. This looks horrible. But it's not. It is not. Basquiat. My Basquiat painting was my favorite painting. It was the one I loved more than anything I had. When my truck was stolen, all my artwork was stolen. When I moved to Colorado, my moving truck was stolen, and all of my artwork was stolen. And I oh, cried. So, this guy is. He worked in Andy Wall in Warhol's studio, and when Warhol was working, yes, I am that old. I spent a couple different times in Warhol's studio. I did buy some original Warhol work, and unfortunately, they're all gone. But this is Jean-Paul Basquiat, Jean Michael Basquiat, and he always. I mean, his hair was like crazy wild, and he painted massive pieces. Me see if I can find a piece. My piece was 8 feet long, 5 foot tall. And he painted with like a frenetic energy. Like you would sit there and look at his work for hours and hours and hours. There was stuff within stuff within stuff within stuff within stuff in his work. This, the piece I had was kind of like this. It was a self-portrait. This piece is 12 foot long. The image. This one is 12 foot long. And he had a very childlike work, but massive energy, like serious energy in his work. And I bought two Warhols, and then I had one huge Basquiat, and it was a big piece. that's like 8 foot long. But yeah, and when you know, if you don't, if you see this, you're like, what the hell? But very, 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 very intricate. This was some of the pieces. This one right here, this was one of the pieces that Andy Warhol first saw, this piece right here. And he was painting this on the streets of New York City. And it's all street art. I like tagging. I like street art. I like street art. I like the rawness of it. And that's what Basquiat did. And this is a triptych. This is actually three paintings. This is called The Nile. And this was three paintings. And when this piece first sold, it sold, I think, for $5,000 or $6,000. This piece right here, the piece I just put on the back, that sold for like $6.7 million a couple years ago. Unfortunately, Basquiat died of an overdose. There was tons and tons and tons of drug use in Warhol's studio, unfortunately. But he did this critter called Ernoch, and did a lot of different pictures of Ernoch. Ernoch was the other side of his soul. He was very quiet. I got to meet him a couple times. He's very quiet. I bought art from him. Very quiet, very nice. Oh, this is how I remember him. This is more the way I remember him. Very quiet, very nice young man. And this is Warhol. When they did a show in Australia. But he always did that crazy wildness with his hair, had it all stuck up all wild. You know, when he first started painting people, there was not a lot of people. Warhol understood the genius of him and immediately brought him into the studio. But Andy was freaking bonkers. But the artwork was energetic, like extremely full of energy. You couldn't tear your eyes off his work. It was so energetic. And that's why I bought a piece. So what do you guys think after seeing this? It's not what you expected, was it? Anybody want to comment?
Not what I expected, Parker.
You're like, Parker, you're nuts. This is high-end art. It can be all different ways. It can be stuff you understand immediately. It can be stuff that has massive energy in it. And that's what Basquiat did, is it's massive, massive energy. And these paintings, you walked into the studio and they were, you know, most of them were 6 to 8 foot tall. Some of them were 12 foot long. Some of them were 10 foot long. You see him in that very first picture, you see him in front of slats. And that whole piece that he's sitting in front of, that's one painting. And it was like 15 feet long. So the size of these things were just incredible, just absolutely incredible. And you'd sit there. I had people walk into the house and just stop and stare because they just couldn't believe the energy in the work. It was really amazing. Most people don't get to a level where they understand art. And when you get to that level, that's the status level. You will need art curators and all that kind of stuff when you get wealthy. If I love having my wealth in art. I love having, because it's portable. when I wanted to move from place to place, I didn't have to worry about selling, a house, a vehicle, or whatever. I just took my work off the walls and moved. Unfortunately, I never thought my truck would be stolen. But masterworks of that nature, they level the playing field. A lot of people that I know, they invested in high-end art when the painter was just, their career was just starting. And then 10 years later, like I multiplied my value of my work, the wealth I had, by 100 times just because the art I had, just because the art, the value of the art went up. It just levels the playing field. So this is the reason why the super rich historically use art, and it that grants them status, because many times art alone can make you rich. It's pretty cool. There's different ways to invest in art if you're not really wealthy, and Masterworks is a program that I talk to people about. I don't make any money off of this, but it's super cool. You can buy shares of blue chip art, and then when Masterworks sells it, you can cash out and you get the profit. So far Masterworks has had a profit of 100% of their sales. So it's kind of cool. If you want to kind of dip your toes in it while you're waiting, that's one way to do it. Another way that you can get status is you can marry into it, or it can come from your parents. So reputation, your parents' reputation is one way that you can get status. My father was a California Peach Grower of the Year for 4 or 5 years in a row. And he would go into a peach association meeting and people would just stop talking and wanting to talk to him. They didn't know he was also a cannabis grower until he got arrested for it. But who your parents are, that's like a click status thing sometimes. You're gonna find that your kids are gonna benefit from the status that you're gonna give to them, because the people are always more lenient with the kids of the very wealthy because they don't want to piss them off, because you never know, you might need to, ask that wealthy person for a favor. And so they just, status is often granted to the children of wealthy people. I mean, look at Sam Bankman-Fried. That's exactly what happened to him. And this is a huge unfair advantage that children from wealthy families or rich families have over everybody else. This is why, you want to get, if you're looking for status, you want to achieve it in the right way. And being the children of somebody wealthy, that's not always the best way, because a lot of times the kids of wealthy parents, they get granted status, but they destroy the reputation of their parents, and then they destroy the status of the name, and then that reputation and that negative status is then funneled into everything around them. So, it makes it difficult. You'll see people try to get status by name dropping. You associate yourself with someone else, and you're borrowing their status for yourself. Basically saying, if you know this person and I know this person and you think this person is cool, then I should be cool by default because I know that person too. Yeah, it doesn't work that way. But a lot of people pushing for glommed status will do that, I one of the most important things to you when you get wealthy will be time. time is more valuable than anything. And time is the one thing that you buy. You can always try to buy time because you have the money to save yourself time by buying, you know, hire somebody to stand in line for you. You know, whether or not you can get into a place that is completely closed is a degree of status. So if I have to wait in line or not, then I can tell what my status is. You know, going to big cannabis events, you know, I'd go to the ticket counter to go get my tickets to get into the show, and 9 times out of 10 I'd be recognized. And no, you're not waiting in no line. They just, oh, here's your Doc's Park. Let's get you a pin and let's pull you in and come over here to this and go into this entry and go this way. That's the power of status. That's the real power. Is it will grant you access to the fast lane in life, and it'll open up doors that are locked for everybody else. Everybody else is going to have to wait. No, there's different entrances and different doors can be opened for you if you have either perceived status or real status. And that's one of the nice things, that's one of the perks about being wealthy, is that you can parlay that into status where you don't wait in line. I don't wait in line. Cannabis events, I don't wait in line. If somebody, I'm an asshole about it too. If they don't recognize me within a few minutes, I leave. And then my phone will ring like 20 minutes later. Hey, we heard you were here. Did you want to come in? Yeah, I was there, but nobody wanted to talk to me, so I left. It's like, your event doesn't matter to me. I don't care. I'm only here because I want to be here. I'm not here, you know. You bring me nothing. So I just leave. And that kind of forces people to decide, yeah, she's got status, or no, she doesn't have any status. So these are kind of things that, this is power. This is power. And you're going to have to figure out how you want to weld it or not. Some people are very comfortable welding power. It comes naturally. Other people, it takes a while. I was not very good with welding power when I first got it. I was just awful. I just abused a lot of things because I didn't get it, you know. You know, what you do for a living is a big status driver too. You know, titles carry status, whether or not you're aware of it. And being a humanitarian is one of the biggest status bringers you can give to yourself. You know, a doctor, teacher, you know, these kind of jobs are, you know, people look at you better than if you're a, you know, garbage man or a plumber. And the thing that's is a lot of times is a garbage man or a plumber, they might make more money than a teacher or you know, a quote, good profession, unquote. But it doesn't matter. It's the perception of the job, whether the job is one that's a noble profession that often grants you status where other jobs do not. You know, some titles, you know, the royalty, that's like Americans will just go gaga over British royalty. And, you know, I've been to British castles. They're a big, empty, hollow, freezing shell, you know. American homes, you know, wealthy American homes are cozy, warm, and, you know, nice. But Americans don't think like that. So you'll see a big American home and you'll see a big European castle, and the Americans will give more status to the castle because it's the perceived status that, you know, you're royalty. That doesn't mean jack shit. Most people don't know that, you know. Basically, it comes down to the more people your professional impact decisions impact, that is what's going to be the higher perceived status. Like, I'm planning to do a cannabis project that's going to be global. And I am going to get, I will have status from that. And I will also be put down. I will also have a group of people that think I'm just the shittiest thing on the world because I'm in the cannabis industry. So it just depends the groups that you're hanging with and what you're trying to achieve. And, you know, how high you go on your professional ladder in life is tied to your expertise as well. So, you know, the value of your job, the expertise you have, these add status. If you got an ability to solve a problem that nobody else has, you're nearly granted status in society almost instantly, because everybody thrives on progress. I am an inventor. I have inventions. I have patents. I can pull out my patent and go, yeah, this is what I did. And I get an extreme amount of status from that, because not many people can invent stuff and get patents for it. So if you're after status, these are some of the things that you want to consider, you know. There's a reason why wealthy men get arm candy girls. Those arm candy girls is, you know, telling the world about your intimate life, you know, who you do the dirty with, you know. And they look at this girl and they go, holy shnikey, she looks like, you know, she walked out of a magazine. Or you see a little old lady with a, you know, a boy toy on her arm, you know. Who you choose to spend your life with, you know, who your life partner is, that speaks volumes about your status. Like, out of everybody in the world, this person that looks like, you know, eye candy chooses you, and they're going to go on this adventure with you. And, you know, they're on your arm, you know. So your partner can lower or increase the perceived status that people have about you. There's got to be something good about you. Otherwise, that eye candy girl is not going to be hanging out on your arm. You know, what are you doing? Is the Johnson working or is the wallet working? One or the other, you know. I'm not a cougar. I am so not a cougar. There's just not happening, not happening, not happening. But because of winning cannabis cups or judging cannabis cups or designing strain, I get hit on by young boys. It's like ridiculous. And they think, oh, you have power, you have status in this industry, and I want it too. So, you know, hello, lady. It's like, oh, no, I'm absolutely not getting naked in front of you. That's not working. But for some people, their life partner status, you know, that's a card they choose to pick. And for many of you, that's going to come into your life. And they're not going to give a flying rip if you've already got a partner. So those are things you have to think of before you get, you know, you get to that point. Some friends have argued that you get status depending on the country you live in. And I was like, nah, I don't believe that. You know, I didn't believe it for a long time. And then I thought about Monaco. Monaco has got more millionaires per capita than any country in the world. And yeah, everybody, if I think about everybody that I only know three people live in Monaco, and every single one of them, it's like, oh yeah, they got status, major status. So if I was younger and I wanted to upgrade my status, and I wanted to have a better life, a better country, different country, I would move to Monaco. It's more of an emotional decision than a financial or a logistical one, but all that can be worked out. And the kind of thing is like, you may think, you know, there's a higher status to live here, there, or the other, but the beauty part about it is you've got the money. So if you decide to move to go to a different country because you think it's a different type of status or the status you're after, you can always leave. You can always come back. There's only one upside to moving. And in the process, you're going to uncover skills that grant you freedom. Once you learn how to live in another country, I mean, that is a skill that you just won't. You'll be shocked how often you'll use that skill. You know, you'll go to a new country, you'll meet new people, you'll find out who you are. When you don't have, you know, say you're American and you don't have a bunch of Americans around you, you're going to learn what you really love in life. You're going to learn what you need to keep your mind and your reality expanded and do different things. And you realize that you've got that kind of money that you can do this in any second you decide to. And like, you come to a different country, you become a different person. You stop asking yourself, how can somebody like me do this? Well, you can. You can. You just have to want to change. And if a different country is where you want to go, then go. A lot of times it's like moving to Monaco. That's instant status. Another big status thing is watches and jewelry. Poor and middle-class people can't play that game because watches and jewelry are not essential, especially watches now. But I would wear Levi's. Yeah, Levi's, 501s. Or I'd wear Wranglers, the two W's on the pockets and the O is for your asshole. this is just common American clothing, you know, nothing major. I'd wear like Dickie shirts because I worked in a greenhouse, you know, but I would have on a ring from Tiffany. I had Chanel bags. I had Rolexes. I had Ulysses Nardin watches. I mean, I had signs of status that are tiny. And in people that have watches and jewelry, there's different categories of watches and jewelry. So you could have a Rolex Submariner, and that, if you know what a Patek Philippe Nautilus is, they're two completely different levels of wealth. I would wear a watch. I had a pair of shoelaces that I wore on my sneakers, and the bottom of the shoelace where, you know, where you first put it down, the very bottom where you laced it up, that was a carat and a half of diamonds, you know, five quarter carat diamonds on the bottom of my shoelace. And then there were diamonds, you know, where the ends, where the shoelace tips were, that was all diamonds and a round diamond on the end. And I wore them on my fucking shoelaces. And all the rest of my clothes were like cheap, you know, grower's clothes. But I wore the accoutrement of wealth, extreme wealth. I would, you know, be in my grow house or whatever, and my driver would come get me, and I'd, you know, he'd bomb up in a Maserati. So watches, jewelry, cars, you don't have to wear every single fancy brand. You just need one piece, one statement piece. I had a necklace that was black diamonds and white pearls. And most people don't know what black diamonds are. They've never seen them. I had yellow canary diamonds, I had black diamonds, I had blue diamonds, all of which are way more valuable than the white diamonds that most people have. And it's a status thing. It's, you know, and it's another thing that like understands like. Somebody that knows what black diamonds are and sees you wearing black or chocolate diamonds, they recognize it. They recognize what you have. And it's a, like a nod, it's a look, and it's like you level up immediately. You know, I just, you know, talk about the car you drive. You know, modern society, people who have expensive cars, they're either one or two things. They're either financially irresponsible or they're stupendously wealthy. Okay. So people look at, you know, Porsches, Range Rovers, G-Wagons, Lambos, Rolls, you know, all of these are virtual signal, you know, signaling cars. Your cars is one of the biggest pieces that grants you status. And it's crazy how you can tell. Just you meet somebody that drives a BMW, and you meet somebody that drives a Honda, and you meet somebody that drives a Silver Shadow Rolls Royce, and you're sitting at lunch with these four different people. And you don't have to tell, you don't have to know which one has which vehicle. By the end of the meal, you will know, because the mindset of the newer generations and that is completely different. And it will expose itself. So the status that you can give yourself status just by the type of cars, you know, boomers were, you know, I'm a boomer baby. I was all about my cars and big homes. And now it's like, I want to live in a yurt. And my friends are like, Park, you be able to afford like a multi-million dollar home and you want to live in a yurt? Have you lost your freaking mind? No, I haven't. I really like living close to nature. I like camping. I like all that kind of stuff. But I fucking hate bugs. I can't stand the idea of bugs. I don't want to, like, I want to live in a tent, but there's bugs there. So I can't, no bugs, no bugs. So what's a high-end tent that has no bugs? A yurt. And I could live in Colorado in the snow, and it's just beautiful, and it's everything goes silent, and yeah, I want to live in a yurt. But parked in front of my yurt is going to be like, you know, a contest, you know. I'll have some, like, you know, a Riva will be parked, you know, in the water. You know, I'll have some high-end, crazy expensive vehicle, but I want to live in a yurt. And it's just, you don't have to have all the flash if you want to have status. You just have little secure pieces, and you'll get status. You'll get doors open for you. You know, it used to be, you know, expensive logos and occasion appropriate outfits. That, you know, that's my generation. Okay. So you'd pull out the fancy weather, you know, different occasions, you know, you've seen people wearing white shoes in the middle of winter. You know, that was a faux pas. That was terrible. You can't do that. Well, the only people that wore white shoes in the middle of winter and show their ankles were rich people, because they didn't care about mud. They just go buy a new damn pair of shoes. And it's the same thing. It's, you know, for going hiking and meeting somebody in jeans or wearing an Adidas tracksuit to a wedding, you know, it's, they break the rules because they can. And the logo thing, that's historical. People think it's wealth. No, it's historical. It's about value. So higher quality products used to require more skill to be made. And so the higher the skill, the more expensive. And so they would take pride in their clothing. So if you buy, you know, you buy a dress from or a suit from an atelier or a manufacturer, they take pride in their quality of their product. So they put their logos on it. And, you know, this effect is still around today. You see all logo bearing clothes and stuff, but the quality element is not the same. You know, people see you with a, you know, a Chanel bag, or a, what's that bag who I really, really hate? Louis Vuitton. It feels like crap in your hands. And they've got money. She's carrying a Louis Vuitton. It's like, it feels like crap, but it accessories grant you status, and they do it really quickly. You don't have to have, you know, full on everything brand logo. It's just one or two things. Taste, you know, it's all about taste. You know, the other thing that people look at and they think, oh yeah, that person's got money or that person's got status, is the condition of your hair, your skin, your teeth, your overall cleanliness. Any woman who walks out of a beauty shop with her hair just freshly done, she feels different. She feels good. You know, it's a different feeling, and you wear that feeling. It's a marketing thing that we place higher level on people with perfect white teeth on the social register than those with crooked teeth. But it's because you have the money to take care of yourself. These are just different things that speak status over wealth. And if you know these little tricks, and status is something you want, you can plan for it now. And start thinking about, you know, what you're going to do. Mine is always going to be, I'll have little pieces. I'll have, I carry a Valentino purse. I still carry, I'm homeless and I have a Valentino purse. Yeah, I wasn't homeless all the time. But, you know, those little things are, you know, I go to a show and, like, I'm not wearing high-end clothes, but people that know wealth understands wealth, and they won't look just at your clothes. They'll look at your ears. They'll look at your fingers. They'll look at your purse. They'll look at your shoes. I have a pair of Valentino shoes that are like $1,800 sneakers, and I have a $4,000 Valentino purse. And there was a time in my life when, you know, I have the money to back it. Now I don't. So I don't wear those. I don't take those with me anywhere now because I can't back it up. But those are some of the indicators of status. And wealth gets you the status. You just need to know how to apply it once you have it. So I hope that helps. I hope that gives you just some kind of interesting things to think about before you get going in this. I appreciate you sticking by and coming in today and having a listen while I was talking. And again, my name is Ms. Parker. I'm with RV Project Help. And my goal is to get every single person ready to be the humanitarian the world is waiting for. It's coming, guys. It's very soon. God bless you all. Thank you for coming by. Bye-bye now.